First question.
Tell me about your broadcast career before coming to WAKY, where you started, stations you worked, where you were before Wacky.
Well, I started in Lake Providence, Louisiana. I came in as a musician. I'd been a musician going to radio school because I'd played on a couple of songs that hit, and I got $52. And I thought, you know, I need something a little more legitimate than music. And I found something a little more legitimate than music, and it was radio. And I did kind of enjoy watching the guys in radio school. I remember going to Junior Achievement as a kid and seeing these guys and thinking, maybe someday, maybe. And it hit me, and I did it. And I went to KLPL, a little station, and the guy that ran it was a neat freak. And didn't have a great sense of humor. You had to hang your third-class license on the wall. And I used to get a big kick out of just taking a license and then just cocking it. And he would see it. He'd walk in that room and see it. And he'd run over to it and straighten it out. One time, evidently, when I cocked it, I got the string on too close to the end of the nail. And he ran over to it and pushed it back up. And it fell over about 6 stitches over his eye. I never told him. And he's probably dead now. I don't hope he's dead, but I don't want him to know. So, but anyway, my first day on the air, KLPL, I was accustomed to going to bed at 5 o'clock in the morning after playing music all night. And then all of a sudden, now I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And my first record I put on was, I think, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. It could have been someone else, but just for lack of anything better. Okay, so I go to work. I have my newscast pulled. I'm scared to death. First time on the air. Paper shaking. In Washington. No, I talk like this when I first got into radio. I was trying to force my voice down really low. And so I did the newscast. I got through that okay. Whew, man. I didn't sleep much the night before because I was apprehensive about going on. But it was okay because I never slept anyway. And so I play the first record, put it on, get through with the newscast, record's on, kind of relaxed at that point. Man, first thing's done. It's like being in a boxing match. You take that first punch, and you're okay then. You're fainting, and you're okay, now I see what's going on here. So I saw what was going on there and felt very relaxed and went to sleep. I mean, sitting in the chair, first record I played, went to sleep. So I woke up 45 minutes later, and the record is tracking 45 minutes on the radio station. And I wake up and I look and oh my God, I'm going to be fired. My first record. And so I didn't know what to do. So I reached over and flipped the mic switch on and said, that was Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. And it went on, played the spot set. I had that lined up and everything. And I made up for all the time before anyone came in, and no one ever said a word. And I realized then, you know what? No one's listening to this station. Hey, that's good. I can do anything I want. And that's where I learned to do characters, and no one cared because no one listened. But it was a good training ground. I went from there to Monroe, Louisiana. Nothing happened in Monroe. I can't think of anything that happened, except my son was born. Outside of that, pretty mundane. And then I moved to Jackson, Mississippi. I learned radio, really, top 40 at WWUN W1 in Jackson, 1590. And then I moved to Memphis to WDIA. I disc jockeyed on the weekends, worked with A.C. Muha Williams, Rufus Thomas. Rufus, to the day he died, I'd see him time to time when he was around promoting something, and he'd come into a radio station when I'm named, I'm named Gary Burbank at this point. Rufus comes in. Rufus Thomas.
Yeah, Johnny.
No, Rufus. It's Gary.
No, you're not.
And he'd never call me that. He'd never call me Gary. That was just it. I wasn't Johnny either, so I didn't, didn't bother me that much. So I worked at DIA, but then I decided to get back into Top 40, so I went back to Jackson. Something opened up at WMPS in Memphis, I think $5 a week more. But I thought it'd be a better springboard, so I went to Memphis and worked at WMPS, where I had to go into the production room. I had to stay 2 hours, and I'd go in the production room to wait to see if he needed me. At some point, I was told by the manager, I think his name was Guthridge or something, and he said,
you talk like this, Arthur. You can't go in the production room because you're taking this man's time by talking.
Okay, so I went out to the lobby and sat and would read magazines. Calls me back in.
Well, we can't have disc jockeys being seen in the lobby. Disc jockeys are heard and not seen, so I want you to get out of the lobby, please.
Yes, sir. Only place left was a bathroom. So I'm in the bathroom, and I'd carried matches in there because people would come in. They'd apologize.
I got to take a dump,
Yeah, I totally understand. I mean, I've taken one myself this morning already. So I just sit there striking matches and, hoping that I wasn't overcome. And then I was approached by the people at Wacky, and I went in and I thought, I didn't really want to go because I'm from Memphis originally, and I kind of liked being, a moderate star in my own hometown, as we always see ourselves as that, maybe. And I said, okay, so I better talk to these guys about this, maybe something good. And so I did, and go into Mr. Guthridge, and I said, thinking about going to Louisville at Wacky.
Well, Louisville is the asshole of the world.
I'm thinking, I'm sitting in here with a guy who makes me sit around to exposed assholes all morning, spouting off whatever they've been doing the night before, and it's terrible, And I thought, you know, I'm going to try this. And so I talked to everyone, got there, and was just enamored by the radio station and the people within. It was a great place and all the people there. I couldn't believe the camaraderie. I mean, the way there was a war out there. There's a war. There's a war out there. And Wacky was at war with WKLO. I had to choose sides. Well, I had no offer from WKLO, so by God, I chose Wacky. They wanted me. And so I got in this war, and man, I jumped in that foxhole, and I knew that someone had my back, because that's how that whole group was. We were friends then, and we remain friends, most of us, to this very day. And I can't say that about any other radio station I've ever worked. I mean, some good people. I don't think I've had an enemy in radio. But Wacky was special. And the people there, the radio station was so special because of the sound and the group of people that worked there on the air and off the air. It was just something very special. I can't put it quite into words, but I don't want to use synergism, but we all together pulled it off and loved doing it together. And we're happy with each other's success. And to this day, I think still feel the same way.
Did your on-air act change when you come to Wacky? How do you think it evolved during your time there?
Well, I've heard this story about the Gary Owens thing. And yes, I did get my name from Gary Owens. And yes, I profusely apologized to Gary for ripping him off. But it was sort of a parody at the time, because what it was, I did a character when I was at WMPS as, "This is Gary Owens. And Gary Owens, it was my announcer." And so either Bob Todd or Johnny Randolph or Dude Walker, we were all sitting around, and they said, "You should do that all the time." And when I first got there, I did Gary Owens as me. I mean, I was Gary Owens because I was Gary Burbank of beautiful downtown Louisville, and my mom would tape all of the audio. Oh, it was audio tapes in on Laugh-In, because they delayed it on Wave TV till Saturday night. So I would use all the material on Friday, and people would hear the show on,
"That must be the guy, because I heard that, he just said that yesterday."
And to this day in Louisville, people say, "Well, you were great on Laugh-In." And I just now say, "Yeah, thanks." But it was Gary Owens. But Gary Owens, to me, is one of the finest men I've ever met. What a great mind this man has. I mean, people see him and think he's just the announcer on Laugh-In, which was great in itself. But you ever sit down with him for an hour and listen to him, you compare him to Jonathan Winters, Robin Williams, anybody you want to put out there, Gary Owens will stand right next to them and shine. And so I was doing Gary Owens on the air. In fact, they even had me, this I think was Bob Todd, and I wore these glasses like Owens wore, but they were just the frames, just had the frames on. And I used to have to put my hand to my ear as I was talking. And for some reason, I'm talking like this now. Now, I'm lifting my hand to my ear, and you'll notice I'll go into more of an announcer phrase. Every time I get into this now, I'm an announcer. I have my hand at my ear. So that's how Gary does that. Just kind of automatic. When you lift your hand to your ear and start talking, try it sometime. But of course, after about a year of doing Owens, I kind of slid into doing myself, which was a combination of Owens. And aren't we all sort of a combination of the people that we, you know, worship as great broadcasters coming up? Between Gary Owens, Russ Knight, the Weird Beard, and people that I've been listening to. Buddy Carr, one of the 15 Buddy Carrs I listened to at KWAY in Little Rock. I kind of grew up thinking that's the way you should sound. And if you can take all of those people, put them all together, and then you kind of come out with a whole new person, and you may seem to lean toward the one that you felt closest to, and that would be Gary Owens for me.
What was Johnny Randolph like to work for?
Well, Johnny Randolph, to work for as a program director, was sort of like working for your cousin, you know? Because you knew you could always have sex with your cousin. Not that I ever wanted to have sex with Johnny, but had he been a woman, I think he could look pretty nice. Not that I even thought about that ever before. Not even once. This first time it ever came up in my mind. He was kind of like the person that you felt very comfortable around. You know, you can say things in front of your cousin you can't say in front of a sibling, because a sibling will run and tell mama. Well, cousins are usually okay with that. Johnny was the kind of guy that made us all feel together. Why do you think you got that many egos in a building? And there was no clashes. I don't think there was ever a single clash of radio personalities in that building. I can't think of one. There may have been one I didn't know about, but as far as I was concerned, it was Johnny who really maintained that kind of relationship with all of us. I know he knew me, and if he had not been a program director, he'd have made a great psychologist, because he knew me easily. He figured me out. Like he told me once, he's, "You're the kind of guy, you know, I get a little excited." Moody used to say,
he's an excitable boy.
And yeah, and so I'd go back and like, "Are the ratings out?" And Johnny's like, "If they're not good, yeah, they're out. Let's see. Somewhere around here, I don't know. Look under that stack of books over there." Then I'm thinking, well, you know, if they're under that stack of books over there, then we're not at death's door, so it's not that big of a deal. And he knew that the way to get to me was not put pressure on me. I work much better without pressure. I would be in baseball the worst clutch hitter in the game. And so I'd be fine. And my whole idea was go in that day, do the best show I could and leave tired, but not too tired. You know, just leave it right there in the control room as far as what I had to say. And if I did something I thought was very funny on the air, I run back to during a break or something. Hi, John. And even though I didn't hear what you did, I could tell by the look on your face. It was like you were a puppy, and you'd come back and I would pat you on the head and you would like...
Okay,
and run back and try to top what you just did. So he analyzed me pretty well. That's kind of how I am. I mean, like any, I think, entertainer, if you're performing before an audience and you get some reaction, you want to do some more. If the audience is like,
boy, when's this going to be over?
You're thinking, when's this going to be over? So he had us all really into it by not overreacting and not really underreacting too. He kind of put us all in the same place, and we were able to get along. And I think that is a major attribute of Johnny Randolph as a program director, to take the diverse people that he had and make them all friends. And somehow, and I have never worked at a station like this since, where we all, to the last person, got along. And not just got along, but regarded each other as lifelong friends.
Tell me a little bit about some of the guys you work with, Bill Bailey.
Well, your old Duke of Louisville. Your old Duke of Louisville, one of my favorite people in the whole world.
I guess the best way I could say anything about Bill, and I guess the highest compliment, to me, he was, I mean, absolutely is great. Bailey, where I did characters on the air, I would do character voices, I would do impressions and things like that. You know, I wanted to do a character. I'm an actor. Bill Bailey was a character. He was an absolute, by himself, standalone individual that everyone wanted to be close to. Everyone wants to sit down and have a beer with Bailey. If you put in Louisville, who do you want to have a beer with? Bill Bailey, President of the United States, King of the World, whatever. Bill Bailey would win every time because he's the kind of guy you want to listen to. I would get up in the morning and race to the radio to turn it on. And I'm not really a radio pig. Most guys will tell you. I don't mean that in a detrimental way. I mean, I was more into other things, but I was a listener. And I would turn Bailey on and be just thrilled just hearing him every day, not knowing exactly what he's going to do next. And I love the guy to this day. And what can I say? Dude Walker. What pipes? He was one of the first guys I heard on the air when I came to Wacky, and I thought, man,
I better get my voice together.
Now, dude was great. He was personable. What a laugh. He had a laugh that no one else close. When he laughed, everyone knew who he... I'll tell you a good story on that. We were at the Shelby County Fair, I think they call this, and I remember this. This is 35 years ago, maybe. And dude was a little nervous about being in this little show we went into, a little backstage type tent. How can I say this? Okay, the main performer had the ability to pick a quarter up off the stage without using her hands or her feet, okay? So when she performed this marvelous act, this great feat of dexterity, dude breaks into, ho, 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 ho. I'm not close. And of course, he's been trying to remain sort of anonymous all night so no one would see. And about three people turn around,
hey, Dude Walker!
And this guy, he turns red and runs out of the tent. He was just ashamed that he was caught there. His laugh got him caught. Dude's a great guy and love him a lot. Still do. We're both from Memphis, in fact.
Next.
County Calhoun. County and I never worked together. We're best friends, but we actually never worked on the same station at the same time and never have. But I hold Coyote in high regard. I just wouldn't in a million years imagine Coyote being able to run a radio station, but he's one of the best at it. Mason Lee Dixon. Mason Lee was, we all pretended to be hippies. We all pretended to be intellectual. We all pretended by growing hair and going to, you know, hippie things and hippie places. We were doing it to get laid. Mason Lee was for real. And it made you a little nervous because you knew he was smarter than you. No matter, you know, how cute you could sound or whatever, Mason Lee could see through all of it. And he was a great guy. Great pipes on the air. Very articulate. He was a guy who could really intimidate you if you listened enough. And I did. And I was always intimidated. Not so much in a bad way. I mean, in a good... Can you be intimidated in a good way? Mason Lee can do that to you. And he's not afraid of it. He's not afraid of saying what he wants to say. Mason Lee one time asked me about a radio station somewhere. This is way after Wacky Days. And I told him what I knew about it. And he said, you know, I haven't been fired from there yet. I'll try to get on. Because he was going to say what he's going to say. And you're not going to stop Mason Lee from stating his opinion if you want to. But if you want somebody that could really go on and get you an audience, let him go on the air and say what he's got to say. You just better have a team of lawyers standing behind him because he's going to say it. Bob Moody, my oldest, I guess out of two people in the world, Bob Moody, my oldest and dearest friend. Bob and I, again, we worked at CKLW together, but we never worked together after that. But we, you know, we hang together all the time. We're seeing each other a couple times a year, three or four times a year in different places, and we make plans to, you know, go on vacation, that kind of thing together. Cosmic Bob is how I first knew him. And I laugh when I say Cosmic Bob because Bob is anything but cosmic. Bob is president of the Boswell Society. And when I say that, this is a society that admires Shakespeare and Boswell, and it's kind of a highfalutin kind of thing over in England, you know? And Moody's over here, damn disc jockey from Arkansas. And he's a president of the Boswell Society.
The sheriff has not even been there before, you see? And suddenly, it's Bob Moody.
If they'd only known. He was a wacky DJ. Reed Yaden. I never really knew Reed Yaden. He did save my life once, but I didn't know him well. That's because Woody Stiles was flying a plane, Lynn King and myself in the back, and Reed, as a pilot, knew something about what he was doing, and Woody, I love Woody. Woody, one time when I'm on the air, he ran in during a break and said,
Gary, can I borrow your socks?
My socks?
Yeah, I got a meeting.
So I looked down to see if I had some, and that day I did have some socks, and Woody borrowed my socks, ran out. And that in itself is kind of Woody, you know, and so Woody's a pilot of the plane, and we hear the message about him clearing some certain area because there's another plane coming this way. Woody acknowledges, says, okay. Turns back and keeps up with the conversation we're talking. I've forgotten exactly what it was. So he's going on, and this goes on for 2 or 3 minutes. And I'm thinking, well, I guess he did what they told him to do, although I didn't see him push a button. Maybe he did it with his foot.
Yeah.
I'm sure Woody did what they told him to do. And about that time, Reed Yaden says, hey, Woody, you're going to acknowledge it and do whatever he said to do. And Woody says, oh, yeah. And he turns the plane, thinking, wow, glad Reed's here. But that's really, I didn't know much about Reed, but that's about it. Lee Masters, another old dear friend, and Lee has done so well, and we're also very happy with Lee. And some of the people that I know see Lee as a guy who is the president of the Southern California ACLU and cringe. I think it's marvelous that he's done something like that and is in that driver's seat that he's in because he's a level-headed guy. Lee is a level-headed guy and is going to do the right thing. Now, you may have political ideology that says anything they do is wrong, but if you talk to Lee for an hour, you're going to come around to his way of thinking if you're listening. And crazy about Lee. What made Wacky such a big success? What made Wacky the success it was, I think, is what I said. It was a great place to be. You woke up in the morning, and if you did afternoon drive, man, I've got 2 hours before I go to work. What'll I do? I'm going early. People would say, you're here at 10 o'clock in the morning. I had a nice apartment. I drove a Cadillac. Yeah, I did, but I wanted to be in that radio station because that was the place to be. That's where all my friends were, and I think everyone else felt that way too, and you wanted to perform for your friends, not just to beat the other station, but to just be good, and I think everybody at Wacky, the manager, the program director, we all took that to heart. We all worked together, partied together, and that's why it was such a great success. Sure, you're going to have stations that work together and party together and are not as big a success, but Wacky seemed to have the right people. I can't tell you how. I'm not a program director. I did that one time. In fact, why did you leave Wacky and when? Okay, I'll tell you why. New Orleans. I had gone to school in New Orleans. I had been there 2 or 3 times, had this love affair for New Orleans, and this job opened up at WNOE. And they wanted me to do mornings, but I thought, well, you know, I need to get into programming, I guess, not realizing what it was. What I wanted was I wanted a big office and some ferns and a couch, you know? I wanted a big, soft couch. And I wanted it in the French Quarter. And my mind was reeling when I thought about that. Me in a big office. Because when I was there before, like the Jimmy Buffett song, going to school and living, I used to ride the streetcar on St. Charles out to Liberty. And I would have to actually go into the convenient food store and buy the banana and steal the tuna fish. And now suddenly I'm coming back with a big office, ferns, and a couch. I can eat at Pasco Manali's. You know, so I was happy about that. I wanted to go there, and I did it. I lasted about a month as PD. If I was still PD, they wouldn't take it away from me, but I delegated everything. But I didn't delegate the couch, the ferns, and the big desk. So we just got to party in there all the time. My guys would come to me at night and say, you know, I need a place to smoke some pot. Well, I usually smoke in my office. And so it was a pretty wild place. We were just kind of crazy people. It's a good radio station. I have to say that, man. Some really good people. If they'd had a decent PD, it could have been a lot better. But I wanted to go there. Lynn King came with me. Lynn, my oldest and dear, like brothers, and some other folks. Jason O'Brien came in. Marty Bass, another guy who I'm like a brother to, and he is to me too. And we all went down together to have an adventure in New Orleans. So why did I leave Wacky? I wanted to have an adventure in New Orleans. And I did, and then I moved on.
Tell me the story about the famous Gary Burbank shooting incident on your last day.
Yeah, the last day on the air, I wanted to do something different, you know, like any day. And the last day, I thought, okay, I'm going to pretend to be shot on the air because I'm kind of a pinko. To this day, people regard me as that, although I'm really not. Maybe a pinko about some things and not about others. I'll have this irate right-wing KKKer come in and shoot me on the air. So to pull this off, we better shut the curtains, and we did. See, we were right there where people could come right by and see what was going on inside. Now, if I was saying that I'm being shot on the air and some do-good Samaritan is walking by the window with, you know, 9mm or something, and if it just so happened that one of the sales guys had walked into the control room, he may have mistaken him for that and said, oh, he's killing Gary. Boom, you know. So we shut the curtains, and I think Johnny notified police. I'm not even sure about that. Yeah, the phone's ringing off the wall, people going crazy and all that kind of stuff, and Lee Masters supposedly holding me in his arms saying, goodbye, Gary. Gee, I've always wanted to do afternoon drive. Yeah, you have to kind of hear the whole thing. But it took a long time to work our way up to it. I started talking about it at 3 o'clock about this irate guy calling, and then he's calling again at 3:15, and it kept building until you saw. You notice, too, he didn't shoot me until my shift was over. So that was a dead giveaway right there. So I was shot, and I died and went to New Orleans and had an adventure.